Welcome to The Chain, the podcast exploring the lives, careers, research, and discoveries of protein engineers, scientists, and biotech professionals. We look at the impact their work is having on the field and where the industry is headed. Tune in to stay up to date on the newest advancements and to hear the stories that are impacting the world of biologics.
Hi, everyone. My name is Tarek Gayur, and today I'm having a conversation with Tomoyuki Tom Egawa from Chugai Pharmaceuticals, a subsidiary of Roche. Tom joined Chugai Pharmaceuticals in 2001 as a research scientist and since has held various positions within the Chugai Biologics Discovery and Development Organizations. He and the various teams he was a part of or led have an impressive track record of delivering novel therapeutics that most of us are familiar with. For example, the factor 9A10 bispecific, the anti-IL-6 receptor recyclic antibody, and the anti-IL-31 receptor monoclonal. An anti-C5 recycling antibody is moving through the approval process. And most importantly, there are about 8 products targeting various disease mechanisms with quite innovative approaches are in development. From 2017 to 2020, Tommy served as the site head CEO of Chugai Singapore Research Center, and this year was promoted to VP and head of discovery division at Chugai. So congratulations, Tom. For the past 2 decades, Tom has worked on every aspect of antibody discovery and development, developed novel therapeutic concepts by incorporating in-depth understanding of antibody biology. That means both the structural and functional flexibility of the variable domain and the constant domains, in-depth understanding of disease biology, for example, clinical unmet needs, and of course, the target biology. Some of the innovative concepts that Tom and his team have developed include recycling or sweeping antibodies, conditional or site-specific activated biologics, bispecific formats or platforms, prior-specific platforms, and multi-specific biologics targeting multiple disease-associated peptides. So Tom has played a key role in building truly innovative teams and organizations, resulting in innovative biologics therapies. Today, we will discuss various aspects of Tom's illustrious career and ask him to share some key lessons learned. But first, Tom, tell us about your scientific journey, especially how did and when did you decide you want to become a scientist?
Okay, thank you, Tarek. Thank you for a very kind introduction. So how did I decide to become a scientist? So I think the most, you know, the biggest experience was that when I was a small kid, I loved to play a Lego, you know, the Lego block.
Yeah, yeah.
So I loved making some new stuff, like a new building or new car. So I always played Lego block. And I think that made me like creating something new. It's fun. So I think that experience really brought me to, you know, I think this scientific field of making something new. Yeah.
Very interesting. So where did you go to school and university in Japan or how?
Yeah. So I spent 4 years when I was primary school in US.
Oh, okay.
So that 4 years I learned English and also I had a chance to do a lot of Lego. And then after that, I went back to Japan and the junior high school, university was all in Japan. So I graduated University of Tokyo School of Engineering. So I majored biochemistry. Yeah.
Okay. So when did and how did you decide to join Chugai?
Yeah. So because I majored biochemistry, I was interested in like a biotechnology at that time. So I did some job interview for multiple companies, not just pharmaceutical, but some other like chemical companies. Mm-hmm. When I happened to know Chugai, I understood that Chugai, the company culture is like a startup or venture company.
Oh, I see.
Not like like a classical Japanese company. Because the Chugai was like a first Japanese company to work on a biologics. So we have produced like erythropoietin or GCSF.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that kind of, you know, like an innovative culture, I think that made me to decide to work in Chugai.
Oh, I see. So you know, at Chugai, you have worked on biologics, both the discovery and the development, on the development side. So can you share with, and you have been there for quite some time now, so can you share with us, I mean, what kind of roles you had before you went to the Singapore side, right? So how did you move up the ladder, so to speak, within Chugai?
Yeah, so I joined Chugai in 2001 as a research scientist. So I joined in a group where the responsibility was the protein analytics. Uh-huh. And also formulation. So my first like 3-4 years was doing like HPLC work, formulation work on antibodies. But what was actually interesting or perhaps very important experience for me was that I was not working on IgG at that time. So my first, you know, the project was IgM antibody. Oh. And then the next was single gen FV. So both the physical chemical property is terrible, right?
So you went from one extreme to the other extreme, the most
the small one and the big one. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I really struggled, you know, analyzing the IgM, which is huge molecule.
Yes.
So I learned a lot. And single gen FV, there's a lot of aggregation that also troubled me. But I think those experience like led me to think about, okay, then let's design an antibody that is more stable or more homogeneous or something like that. So brought me into the field of engineering the protein, engineering the antibodies.
Oh, I see.
And I also did some work on pharmacokinetics. And also I found that some antibodies has, you know, fast clearance, some are very long half-life. And I wondered why, what's the difference? It's all IgG.
Yeah.
So then I thought, okay, maybe we can engineer the antibody to have like a longer half-life or something. So those experience actually brought me to, you know, the engineering field. And I think I started to work on the antibody engineering from 2006 or something. So my first work was like engineering the charge of the antibody so that we found that the lower isolated point antibody has a longer half-life. And then I worked on some engineering of the stability. And then I worked on like a recycling or bispecific antibody. So then doing those work, and in 2010, the Chugai, like the management thought that this kind of engineering stuff can like make a difference or become a competitiveness. So the Chugai management, the research management at that time, established, like a technology development group.
Oh, I see.
And I became a team leader of that group. That group focused on developing new technologies. Such as sweeping or switch or the dual IG. Yeah. Then I became a group. Yeah. And then I became a group manager covering technology development and like a lead optimization, lead identification. And then 2016, I became head of biologics discovery, which is responsible for all the stuff for the antibodies. In 2017, I was transferred to the Singapore side. Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's really nice to know. Thanks for sharing. So you have done some work, you know, in the PK field and biodistribution. You had done some work on the role of variable domain and FC domains. So just looking back, do you think we have optimized the variable domain and the constant domain selection process to get the right of PK properties or biodistribution characteristics of the antibodies?
Now we know a lot about the factors that affect the PK. So yeah, I think we are at the highest or at the good stage of understanding the PK and designing the antibody with a good PK. Yeah.
But are you working in this area as to really having a very long half-lives or short half-lives by combining optimum variable regions and optimum FC regions?
Yeah, right. Okay. So we work on both variable and FC region to have optimized PK. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So Tom, with all this experience that you have gained throughout your career, are there any key lessons that you want to share with especially young scientists, the people who are coming in the field, and what would you suggest? Or just,
I think what I always tell or speak to my colleagues, especially the younger colleagues, is that I think you must enjoy the science or enjoy the work. But I think to enjoy what you're doing, it's not easy because we always face difficulties. So we have to work very hard. And I think I did not start my work on engineering. I started working like analysis, formulation, PK, and I interacted with a lot of people with different expertise.
Yeah.
So I think the interaction with many scientists with different expertise, I think this is very important. And especially in the drug discovery, I think you cannot do drug discovery by yourself. So you have to collaborate with other scientists. You have to trust, you have to respect the scientist who has a different expertise or maybe sometimes different opinion. So I think the trust and respect to other scientists, I think that's also the important factor. But with all this, I think the most important thing is that you can enjoy, the science. Yeah.
So do you think, do you find in your experience, young, they know how to enjoy or they learn or you have to guide them and constantly remind them?
I always say that you have to enjoy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
No, that's great. So, being with Chugai for about 20 years, and you have worked in different parts of the organization, for example, discovery and development, and the two sides are really, really critical. They have very distinct functions and timelines and things. The question I have for you is that as Chugai, how do the discovery and development organizations work together to keep a steady supply of innovative products and things like that, right? How do you keep them together? How do they work?
Here the development organization means the clinical development.
Well, even in the process of once you have discovered the lead and you transfer it for the CMC other parts. So it's not just clinical, but even within the discovery process, because I ask this question is that sometimes in big organizations, there are separated and silos. And so when you transfer one, from one step to the next, something, it's not very seamless.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So perhaps the situation may be different between the interaction with the CMC people and the interaction with the clinical development people. So for CMC, you're right that when we were working with bispecific, that was in around 2006, 7, 8 or something. So at that time, we did not have a good relationship between the research and the CMC.
Yeah.
So we say that we can produce bispecific, but CMC people who only experienced the normal IgG, they said this is impossible. So we had a lot of face-to-face discussion and exchange idea. And I think eventually that the bispecific project at the end, we became very close. And we both party understand that the early interaction, not after the selection of the clinical candidate, but early interaction when we start the optimization of the antibody, we should start interaction interacting each other and starting to talk about, you know, how we, you know, manufacture this molecule, especially when the molecule is complex. So now I think the relationship between the research and CMC is very good. We have like no difficulty in, you know, moving the, even the complex molecule from the research to the development. Yes. And so, for the clinical part.
Yeah.
I think we have quite unique research strategy, probably different from most of the pharma. So yeah. I think that the many of the pharma has this kind of disease area strategy, or, you know, it's driven by disease areas.
Yeah, right? Yes, yes.
Right. Chugai, although we are in Roche group and Roche has this kind of disease area strategy, but because we are independent, especially in the discovery, our strategy is like disease agnostics, and we put our efforts on, you know, establishing the technology native or differentiating. And if we can say, you know, our technology would be a very, can create a very competitive and also the drug that can, you know, meet the unmet medical needs, we work on that target or disease, regardless of our experience or disease strategy.
Ah.
So therefore, when we start the new project in the research, we usually, we are not affected by like a clinical development or the business kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's why the interaction between the research and the clinical development don't actually happen in the very early stage.
Ah, that's very interesting. So in order to sustain this kind of a relationship, did you have to put together or formalize certain structures or processes? For example, when you start with your discovery programs, do you bring in certain people from other departments that are not really early on? But is there some kind of a formal structure, or you just, as you go, you build the teams and bring in people and things like that?
Yeah. So now I think we have more like a structure between the discovery research and early clinical development. So now we have a structure that, so we initiate a project by the decision just by the research division. But once the program proceeds to like a lead optimization stage, we form a team that consists of the discovery research and people from the early clinical development. So then we started to work together. Yeah, so that's it. Yeah.
So, you know, what I gather, so because I think you have a very unique being very closely related to both the discovery and organization. So do you find that are there differences in managing the discovery side or the development part? Any lessons that you have learned that you want to share?
Actually, maybe the difference on my side, because when I became a head of like early clinical development, actually I like knew nothing about clinical development, like a clinical operation on those and stuff. So I had to like listen to the colleagues, trust colleagues, delegate. So my management style completely changed because I cannot make like a good advice or, you know, good decision. Yeah. Because I don't know clinical development. So so my like management style really, you know, changed when I moved to this early clinical development. So, and now because I'm head of the research division, so I know about the drug discovery, but I learned that, you know, that engagement, delegation or like a trusting, I try not to say too much, although I know, but I try to be more quiet in the meeting. Yeah.
Oh, okay. You know, so, you know, one of the things that I have always admired you and your teams is that you have come up with some really very innovative platforms from the technology point of view, like the recycling or the sweeping antibodies, biospecific formats. And more importantly, you know, the site-specific or tissue-specific activation. So, and that comes from, as you were saying, you know, and then trying to build a platform. So you just mentioned that you do start with the technology development and then, you know, you are disease agnostic and all that. So I'm very intrigued by the evolution of these programs that, you know, first technology, then biology, and then moving towards the share something about, you know, that when you develop these programs, these technologies, evolutionary process, like how do the teams work? Or how did you come up with, for example, you know, the recycling antibody or ATP dependent activation and things like that? Any examples that, you know, of the process? I'm more interested in the process.
And talk about how we came up with the recycling antibody. Yeah. So at that time, different team or different scientists, not me, the program of second generation Actemra or tocilizumab, the IL-6 receptor antibody. So the strategy that they were taking is to affinity match Actemra or tocilizumab. So improved affinity. So, but I thought that this would work because even if you have a very high, very, very high, it's like single digit nanomolar. So they were thinking to make like a single digit picomolar Actemra.
Uh-huh.
But I thought that this would not work. And because I was working in pharmacokinetics, what was like the limiting was that it is IL-6 receptor mediated clearance of the antibody that determines the duration of the efficacy. So, and I discussed with the pharmacokinetics scientists who are just sitting near me, and I asked him to do some kind of modeling or simulation to what happens if you affinity mature. And the answer was, the simulation says it will not extend, maybe just one day or something.
Yeah,
it does not make a big difference. But at that time, I think the modeling and simulation was not like established. So people didn't believe. Why improving 100-fold, you know, reduce the dosage by 100-fold, something like that?
Yes, yes.
So I had a lot of discussion, negotiation with my like a boss. But eventually, I think this is like a Chugai culture. The Chugai culture is not top-down, it's bottom-up.
Oh, I see. Okay.
The research idea comes from each scientist.
Ah.
And so my boss said, okay, if you want to try your idea of this pH dependent stuff, you can, but it's your responsibility.
Oh, okay.
So then, you know, I could, you know, start, I could start this pH dependent, you know, and engineering. Yeah. So I think this kind of culture, the bar of starting something new or like doing some feasibility study, I think is quite low in Chugai. Yeah.
Oh, that's really good. That's okay. So, you know, you are also, you have developed this new concept of, I don't know if you have published it yet or no. I haven't seen the paper.
Actually, it was published yesterday.
Oh, okay. That's great. Congratulations. Because that's a very, very interesting concept with the dual fab and site specific, you know, like activation. Can you share some background and the technology itself? Because I think that's quite intriguing.
Yeah, so I think we started to work on this dual IG to CD3 and CD137 with the same paratope. So at that time, we already had this T-cell engager or T-cell bispecific in early 2010 or something. But because this is not like a complex, so it's just a simple bispecific. So we thought that we should work on like a next generation.
Yes, yes.
Because this is simple bispecific, so everyone will be able to produce this in near future. So we started to work on T cell engager, and we discussed like what we should do. So at that time, there was like several reports coming from the CAR T cell that just the TCR or CD3 signaling domain does not make the CAR T cell effective even for the hematological cancer. And you need a co-stimulatory signal, either CD137 or CD28 to make very effective CAR T cells. So we thought that this would also apply to the T cell engager. So that's why, you know, we started to work on adding metric signal onto the T cell bispecific. Yeah. But it was a long journey.
So how long did it take you? Because, because I think a lot of this, the dual fab and the CD3, CD37 tri-specifics that you have, that required a lot of structural yes. as well, right? Mm-hmm. So at what stage, how often are you applying the structural component in terms of designing these conditional activated molecules? And what biology? Because I think that becomes... as well, and just one other comment that do you take advantage of just the structure, or are you also using cryo EMs? I mean, do you have any opinion on the two structural approaches?
Yeah, so now we have cryo EM actually. Oh, okay. Yeah, but at that time we only had the X-ray structure analysis team. And actually, we Chugai has quite a big group of structural biology. Yeah. So when we, came up with Daratop, recognizing both CD3 and CD137, we have to use a phage library or some kind of library display approach because we cannot design that kind of molecule, rationally. So at the same time, we were working on the switch. ATP switch antibody.
Oh yeah, so, that's right.
Yeah, so those two programs were like nearly parallel. The switch antibody was a little bit advanced, and for the switch antibody, this is published. So we first got this ATP binder and solved the structure and made a library using the structure and designed the phage library. That maintains this ATP binding, but diversify the peripheral residues of the ATP binding site. And actually that worked very well. So we thought that this kind of similar approach can be applied to make this dual IG, CD3, CD137. So then we solved the structure of the CD3 antibody in complex with CD3, and we did some scanning of the CDR residues and see which amino acid can maintain the CD3 binding. So based on those, all the comprehensive, mutagenesis results, we designed a synthetic library that consists of the amino acid appearing in each site that maintains the binding to CD3. And that library was used for the panning against CD3 and CD137. And then we could obtain the dual binder. Yeah. So I think our knowledge or experience in the switch antibody, ATP switch antibody generation, really helped to move this dual IG project. Yeah.
So what stage is it now, the dual fab? Is it already in the clinic, or is it?
We have two molecules using this CD3, CD137 dual IG in phase one.
Oh, okay. Congratulations. I think that's really very, very interesting approach.
Thank you.
So, yeah. So, because, the way you approached your programs from the initial idea and through the process. If you look back, do you think that this research and discovery process can be expedited? Can be made faster? Or every program or every process, it has its own time and it takes, it just has its own way of doing it.
So you mean that how can we make this process faster?
Yeah. So
So as the organization becomes like a bigger and bigger, I think that decision making becomes slower, even for small feasibility studies, it tends to be like more, you know, managed. My current effort is, as I said before, how to lower the bar to conduct some feasibility study or test the scientist idea in a small scale. I think that is probably the most important part. I think, yeah.
So you are saying, if I understand you correctly, what you're saying is that if you can shorten the time for some kind of a more proof of concept, actual proof of concept, that would be one way of shortening the timelines.
Yeah. So there are like many cases that, okay, so some scientists have this idea of antibody engineering, and they, you know, present the idea to the boss and have discussion. But this discussion continues forever, like 3 months or 6 months. This is good, or this is you have to do this, or this is not good. It takes like 3 months or 6 months before you start the feasibility study. So then why you just start the feasibility study now? Don't discuss for 3 months or 6 months. Just conduct small study and then discuss whether this idea work or not.
You mean have a database discussion?
Yeah.
Don't
do too much discussion.
So it comes back to, rather than doing a PowerPoint discussion, you actually have to have some data too.
Yeah, yes, right. Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, just so because you have developed, you know, as we know that in science, you know, there are failures and successes. And so I just to, and that you have worked on so many different aspects of the discovery and development, what would you consider the most exciting project or finding of your scientific career?
I think the most exciting moment that I have experienced is that when we obtained the data for our fast recycling antibody in Cynomolgus monkey, and when I saw the data that the PK is actually significantly improved, because that was like the recycling antibody was like the my own idea from the concept. I worked on bispecific, the factor 9, factor 10, but the concept of the bispecific was already known very well. The bispecific IgG was reported by the Genentech colleagues in late 1990s. But for the recycling antibody, the concept itself was like proposed by myself. And I did this histidine engineering by myself, and the molecule that I designed was tested in the monkey PK study and found that the PK was improved. So yeah, that was the most exciting moment that I really still remember.
That's great. Okay, so then on the flip side of this, right? So what was the most disappointing idea or finding or moment that you thought was a great idea but didn't work out, or you know?
Yeah. So after we worked on this recycling antibody with a pH-dependent variable region, so we started to work on like so-called sweeping antibody.
Oh, yes.
So we first worked on increasing the FcRn binding at the neutral pH. So engineer the Fc so that the antibody antigen complex can bind to FcRn at the cell surface in plasma, neutral pH, and then bring the antibody antigen complex into the cell and sweep out the antigen. So that's the concept of sweeping antibody. So we made this FcRn enhanced pH-dependent antibody, and we tested a lot in mice. It worked really well. It, you know, really sweeped out the antigen from plasma in mice. So we were very excited. And actually with these data, the Chugai, actually the executives decided to establish a research lab in Singapore. So that the Chugai can, you know, more work on antibody discovery. So the Chugai Singapore site was like established to utilize this recycling, sweeping, and bispecific, this technology for the drug discovery. Yeah. So then we tested this FCR and sweeping antibody in monkey, and it did not work well.
Oh,
okay. So that was very disappointing, and actually was a very hard time for me, because not just the science-wise, but also the Chugai company decided to establish a lab in Singapore, and they thought that sweeping antibody would be very innovative. But we found that it doesn't work in monkey. Yeah. It was like, oh my God.
So do you know why it didn't work in monkeys and work in mice?
So as the FcRn compete with the endogenous IgG, right?
Yes.
Uh-huh. And the mice has lower endogenous IgG as compared to the monkey or human.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So the mice, there's tenfold difference of the level of the endogenous IgG between the mice and the monkey. So monkey with higher endogenous IgG level, but give up. So we thought that maybe using other Fc receptor, not FcRn.
Yeah.
Because so FcRn, the normal IgG does not bind to FcRn at all at neutral pH, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But Fc gamma receptor 2b, that's Fc receptor that even IgG1 can bind with some mm-hmm. affinity. And we knew that the Fc gamma is very highly expressed in the liver. And this liver is the organ that, metabolize many proteins and stuff. So we thought that by enhancing the binding to Fc gamma receptor 2b might be like alternative approach. So we applied this, Fc gamma receptor 2b selective enhanced Fc to the pH dependent antibody. And we tested that in monkey, and it actually worked very well. So FcRn sweeping was very disappointing, very shocking for me. But eventually the Fc gamma receptor 2b sweeping was, was also another very exciting finding for us. Yeah.
Well, that's good. Thanks for sharing the story. Yeah. because some of these things, when you write a publication, it looks very straightforward, but the background, there's a whole story behind some of, it takes a long time in publications. So, we have already touched on some of the things about Chugai culture and all that, but one of the things that I do find is that, it is very important to keep people engaged and motivated to do good science and to come up with, good ideas and try them out. So how do you keep your teams engaged or motivated? Are there any specific core activities or traditions that you have that people think are, that people at within your department think that are very important for them?
Yeah. So I think there are several very important culture or shared philosophy our research organization. So the first one is I think we don't care about the timeline.
Very interesting.
So it's okay for us that the project takes even 10 years. So, for example, for the factor 9A, factor 10 bispecific, from the idea to identifying the clinical candidate antibody, it took 9 years, but we did not give up. We continued for 9 years. And finally, we could make it. This does not just apply for the antibody drug discovery, but also for small molecules. So Chugai has created the oral GLP-1 receptor agonist, which is licensed to Eli Lilly and now conducting phase 3. So this oral GLP-1 receptor agonist at that time was very difficult, but we worked this for 8 years. And finally, we could make this oral GLP-1 receptor agonist. So I think that's very important culture, that we work on project that we think it is worthwhile. And And another thing is that what we call quality-centric drug discovery.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't compromise the quality of the clinical candidate molecule. So quality means best, you know, pharmacological effect, like a best affinity, best PK, best physical chemical property. We try to make the best molecule. We don't like bring it to clinical development with the molecule that is like a so-so. We use our time to make the best molecules that we can. So that make us like that we are very confident that, you know, this is our best molecule. So bring this molecule to clinical development. And if it doesn't work, okay, we can give up. But we don't want to bring this so-so molecule to clinical development and fail. Right. So that's, I think, the second culture. And the third one is, maybe I just talked about this, the startup-like culture or a bottom-up-like culture.
Yeah.
So the top management in the research. So now I'm the head of research. So I don't say you do this. You work on this kind of, you know, technology development. So the scientist, they think about the idea. It's everything comes from the scientists. It's a bottom-up culture. And we try not to say no to their proposal.
That is very important.
Once they, you know, present the idea, the management try to like improve the idea, not deny the idea. So the role of the management in Chuga is not just the management, or maybe not management, supporting the scientist, helping the scientist to, you know, realize their idea or brush up, make the idea better one. And yeah, I think that's the another, I think, important culture or the philosophy in Chuga. Yeah.
Well, it sounds really, really exciting. It almost sounds like I should apply there and come and do some basic research again. Okay, just moving on, Tom, you know, so just wanted to also get your opinion on some of the new technologies and areas that are coming up. And the one of the big areas is this AI, machine learning, and things like that. And, you know, the general assumption being that if you have a lot of data accumulated, somehow you will be able to answer some of the questions. And so the question, from your point of view, that you have seen so much data and been able to interpret, massive amounts of data, from the antibody field, which of the areas, which problems can be addressed with AI machine learning now with the available data sets? So do you have any comments on that? And, you know, and on the flip side, it's just that there may be other critical problems within the biologics field that we cannot solve with the current data sets. So, you know, if you have any, if you want to share your thoughts about this.
So actually, we are using machine learning for a lead optimization. Because Chuga has this comprehensive mutagenesis of CDRs, this like a methodology. So for all the antibody projects that goes to the lead optimization stage, we apply this platform. So we make single substitution of the each CDR residues to all other amino acid and do the Biakawa study, stability, expression, and so on. So for all the project, we have this comprehensive mutagenesis data. So with this data, you know, we use this combined with the machine learning and use this machine learning output to design the best molecule. So this is not just for like shortening the duration of the optimization, but sometimes this machine learning, the computer can like propose the combination of several mutations that the scientists can never, you know, think of.
Yeah.
So therefore this machine learning can, you know, actually contribute to not just shortening the duration period, but also making better antibody that the scientists alone cannot make. Yeah. For the area that I think we should think about applying this AI or machine learning, but don't have enough data is, I think, immunogenicity and ADA, because immunogenicity should be like the risk of immunogenicity, I think, is mostly determined by amino acid sequence, not impurity, I think, in case of antibodies, I think. And there should be so many data available. If you collect all the data of the clinical development, you know, conducted. But unfortunately, this immunogenicity or ADA data is not often published.
Yes.
And even in companies, you know, once the program goes to clinical development, this ADA data is kind of like a negative data, right? So they don't want to share the data.
Right? Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think collecting all the data of the immunogenicity, the ADA percentage or something, and the sequence, and do some machine learning and do some in vitro T cell assay and so on, then I think we would be, you know, we would have much more chance to, you know, design the antibody with, you know, less immunogenicity or ADA risk. But I think this has not been, I think, pursued, I think, so far, because of the data availability of the immunogenicity at the ADA.
But I think that's also a very, very complex issue, right? Because in the clinic, number one, patients are outbred, right?
So yeah. Right.
Number two, the immune status, depending on the disease state, is so difficult, you know. So, you know, so we know that not every patient develops an ADA. Let's put it that way, right? So there are, and the ADA is quite different in different disease states.
Yes.
So, I think it's also, I agree with you that the data is not out there. And I think because the ADA assays are also very difficult.
Yeah.
They're not standardized.
Yeah.
I think
because of those like multiple factor effect, right? Immunogenicity. So that's why we need a lot of data, right? I think with a small data, there's so many parameters that we need to consider, and probably we cannot draw any conclusion. But with a huge amount of immunogenicity data together with like HLA or the disease status or something, yeah, then probably we could do some machine learning and have some hint.
So do you have any preference for some of the existing algorithms that, you know, there are programs out there that say that they can predict ADA or immunogenicity or immunogenic epitopes, things like that? Do you take advantage of those?
Yeah, we use these in silico, like a T cell epitope prediction program.
Yeah.
But I think the in silico is just like for reference. I think we do MAPS assay, this the mass spectrometry-based identification of the presented peptide. And also, we have a high-throughput T-cell activation assay to, you know, test the immunogenicity risk. But that kind of, you know, the in vitro method does not, you know, 100% predict the clinical immunogenicity.
Yeah. So, you know, just staying on the new technologies, and so... are there any new exciting technologies on the horizon that you see, or new areas to pursue? And basically, you know, like some of the delivery of biologics, like oral or nasal or intracellular, you know, how do you see this whole field evolving of biologics? Any comments?
Yeah, so for like the oral delivery or the intracellular delivery of the antibodies. So we are taking a different approach. So Chugai work on antibodies, small molecule, and we have a third, like a modality, we named a mid-size molecule. So this is a cyclic peptide composed of non-natural amino acid, and the peptide bond is N-methylated. So this mid-sized molecule is orally available, and it can go into the cell, and it can bind to the target with like a antibody-like affinity, like the picomolar affinity. So we use this cyclic peptide to make like an oral version of the antibodies or a target that interested in proteins. Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
But still, we have some effort on bringing the antibodies intracellularly to deliver some like a cargo into the cell. So these cyclic peptides can inhibit the protein-protein interaction inside the cells, but cannot, you know, deliver the cargo into the cell. So we have some efforts working on this intracellular targeting antibodies, but it's not easy.
So it's some kind of an ADC approach using biologics to bring these peptides inside the cell or something like that?
Oh, you mean the cyclic peptide?
Yeah.
No, cyclic peptide is just a cyclic peptide.
For the intracellular delivery of these cyclic peptides.
Oh, so this cyclic peptide alone can penetrate into the cell.
Okay. So Tom, thank you for sharing all, your experiences and your thoughts. I just have, a couple of questions. One is that, with your increasing responsibilities at Chugai and now being responsible for overall discovery, how do you balance your work and work-life kind of activities? It's a lot of work, within the organization. And just related question, what are your other hobbies and interests other than science? So it's basically the two questions are related. Mm-hmm.
So for work-life balance, So first of all, I think I try to enjoy the work. So like work is like included in life.
Oh, good. Yes.
But I try not to work on weekend, Saturday and Sunday. And I think Japanese company, a long time ago, it was not easy to take a leave holidays for like 2 weeks or something.
Yeah.
But now I think it's getting easier to take like long 2 weeks holidays. So I try to take long leave and work on my hobbies. And my hobbies are cycling, canoeing, traveling, sure, and skiing.
Oh.
So when I was a university student, I was riding bicycle to travel like all around the world, like South Africa.
Oh. In,
many places. I cycled so many places, and I love cycling. Yeah. So I love outdoors. Yeah.
Fantastic. That's really good to know. Final question, that if you were not a scientist, what would you have done as a career? Have you ever, you would have been a cyclist, a skier?
Yeah, so I would now like thinking what to study in university. So he's high school.
Uh-huh.
So like when I'm talking to my son, so what his son is like thinking what to do.
Yeah.
And I was also thinking, what shall I do if not science? So I think my answer is I probably wanted to be a architect.
Architect,
yeah.
Oh, okay.
In the building or the... I think this is probably because I loved the Lego.
Instead of designing antibodies, you will design buildings.
Yeah, yes, right.
that's really nice to know. So Tommy, thank you so much for your time and sharing all the lessons learned and your experiences, your science, and above all, your acquired wisdom in this and moving this field. You guys have done some work throughout this, for the past couple of decades and also before that. So we just want to wish you and your family all the best and all the success in the future. Thank you very much for your time.
Yeah. Thank you.